I'm sitting with David Data, the author of 8 best-selling books on finding your way to God through sexuality. David, I've been following you around for the last, 4 months now, and I've met a lot of people that have been influenced and touched deeply by your work. And hearing the feedback from some people, there seems to be a recurring number of areas that people have confusion around, and a lot of people ask me these questions, and I thought maybe it might be interesting to bring them up in an interview where I can air them to you and sort of play the devil's advocate, and so you get an explanation on some of these areas of confusion that come up. For example, I was looking at one of your early brochures, I think it was about 2 or 3 years old, where basically it seemed to be describing ways to improve people's sex lives and improve their relationship. But is it really what you teach on just how to improve people's lives?
No. What I attempt to do is help people realize that who they are, who everything is, what everything is. And the only reason I use sexuality at all is because people seem to be very interested in sexuality and also very confused about sexuality, and some of their deepest refusals of God, or their deepest refusals to relax as pure being, or their deepest refusal to relax with things just the way they are, have to do with sexuality. So, for instance, when I met you, you thought that you were very conscious. You have a bunch of followers, hundreds if not thousands, I believe, all over the world. And in our very first workshop, if I remember correctly, a bunch of ladies were saying that they felt no energy in your lower body, and your relationship, although clearly committed to love and God, was also filled with conflicts that were detracting from you and your lover's capacity to open to God. And so the reason I use sexuality is because here you are, the founder of a church, leader, a spiritual leader for thousands of people, and you're utterly confused about sexuality. So I found that it's a beautiful way to begin helping people open to what is, regardless of their level of openness already. So I do not teach people how to improve their sexual life. I do my best to help people relax as they are, recognize infinity as this moment, breathe, feel, and love the divine as this moment, and then through the whole body, embrace every moment, including the moment that includes their lovers, in that love. But that takes all kinds of skills because of patterns that have evolved in people like in you. So, again, using you as an example, since you enjoy being used thus, your hips were really locked. Now, in the scheme of infinity, big deal. You know, it doesn't matter if your hips are locked. You could open to God with your hips locked. You could open to God with no hips. You could open to God after death. You could open to God in dream states. You could open to God as any appearing form with or without hips. On the other hand, here we are, and you're appearing with hips, and you're appearing with hips that happen to be locked, and your capacity to open to God as this form, this specific form, which is temporary, illusory, unnecessary, really, but still, you're identified with this form, and the form that you're identified with has locked hips. So helping you open your hips does help you, as this specific form, be congruent or open to or transparent to that which is living all of us in every realm. And so in this little slice of reality, which is a tiny, tiny part of reality, you're appearing with locked hips, and helping you unlock those hips, help you recognize the depth, the consciousness, the openness that is now. And even more importantly, it helps you express that through your form that is appearing now. And again, that form is temporary and really isn't even existent. But while it seems to appear, it provides a vehicle for expression of the depth of your recognition. And regardless of how deep your recognition is, if you have locked hips, it's not going to be able to be expressed fully through your hips, which again isn't necessary in any way, but it sure created a lot of conflict between you and your intimate partner. And every woman in the room in that first workshop we did together was feeling it, and it was creating suffering in their lives. And so why create suffering in apparent other individuals' lives unnecessarily if you have the choice? So I guess you could say that I give people that choice, and it's an unnecessary choice. It's not a choice of improving their life. It's a choice of allowing their presently appearing vehicle of God to be more or less transparent and expressive of that, which is always the case anyways, but to allow it to come through more completely, and that fullness is felt by others. So you could have a room of people, as you did, who could vote, give you numbers 0 to 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, as you fluctuate through the scale of how open your body is to expressing that love. And it's objective. Everyone in the room can feel it. It's your choice whether you want to create suffering through your vehicle or whether you want to create deeper love through your vehicle. And in any case, it's all God. It's all love just the way it is. So no, I don't help people improve their lives.
No, you don't try to, but certainly my experience of working with my hips, for example, you know, I could feel that after some time I could notice what you were talking about, that I couldn't really breathe very deeply, that my hips were locked, and through doing yoga and through doing breathing exercises, that people wouldn't be able to mirror back to me, although I couldn't really tell a huge difference myself. It seemed to make a large difference from an outside objective point of view. So from that point of view, it does help people's lives. It does improve their sex life, their relationship, their ability to transmit consciousness into this world.
Yes, but I thought your question was, is that what I'm setting out to do? And that's a side effect, certainly, of often of what I do with people, is it improves their lives, but that's not the point of what I do any more than it's the point of a painter to put blue on canvas. It's the overall art of God's expression that we're all here allowing or not allowing, and if your hips opening help deepen that expression, fantastic.
The people that I've worked with in the past come from a more, I guess, they're really only interested in spirituality in a certain form they can relate to. So a lot of people would say to me, why do you even care if your hips are locked? Why do you even, if this is all just a temporary illusion, why would you even bother to try and improve it? Doesn't that just hook you more into the believing this is real and having an investment of being identified with your body and your form?
Anyone who asks that, I would answer, don't do it. Continue with what you're doing until you realize the suffering you're causing, or you continue to suffer. Anything could act as a bypass to truth. Any moment can provide you with an excuse not to surrender open. Even reading questions on a piece of paper. And so you could get hooked in using the already deep love that is alive as all of this by a sandwich, by sex, by your bodily appearance, by a dream that may occur. You could lose your continuity or felt continuity with God in all kinds of ways. Anybody who's really thinking that if they do something, like try to open their hips, it somehow detracts from their connection to infinity, has a very limited definition of infinity, since I would hope that that would include their hips. People often, in their early stages of spiritual practice, have a realization of consciousness or love, and in that realization, any true realization involves the realization that it is true already, that you don't need to do anything at all. There is no you to do it, in fact, and there's no it being done. There's just love or consciousness as it is right now, and that realization is true. And if they're coming from that place of realization, they don't need to open their hips or they could open their hips. Either way, their realization doesn't alter. It's only when they don't have that realization and they're striving for it and they're already in the egoic mode of attempting to achieve a recognition of consciousness that they even have the mind to divide actions into those which are true and those which are false. And once you've done that, you're already seeking for something as if it weren't true already. What the hell does it matter whether you open your hips or not to the God or the love or the consciousness that is already? It doesn't matter at all one way or the other. So it's just a matter of preference, really. It's a matter of art. It's a matter of, is your deepest art, or even if you care, if your deepest art is being expressed. You don't have to. There are people like Ramana Maharshi who clearly had profound realization, who physically was a mess. And yet that realization is transmitted very well through the mess of his physical vehicle. Now, he's one example. There have been many other realizers who have produced great art, great dance, great music, who have written extraordinary scriptures, who have founded universities, who have gone on to create all kinds of human expressions and perhaps non-human expressions sourced in their realization. Ramana Maharshi, just as a character, didn't have those karmas, and so he also didn't have karmas as a teacher. No, he didn't come out wanting to be a teacher. From all reports, he basically was found. And each person, if they just relax completely, spontaneously discover the gift that they are as birth, as a physical manifested form. And so many people today are kind of mimicking Ramana Maharshi because he was recent in history. People alive know, you know, he was recorded. He's not a fabled character. People actually have a recording of what he said, so I could understand why they mimic him. But they're mimicking one specific human manifestation of realization that does not represent the full spectrum that each individual or apparent individual might manifest. So you got a bunch of yuppies essentially copying the bodily karmas of one great realizer, and that becomes a kind of fascist regime of do nothing, no art, just be. And that in and of itself is a great limitation of love, although it's also true. And the way he expressed it, Ramana Maharshi, was his way of expressing it as an individual. If every apparent individual relaxed as much as he did, then God or love or consciousness would make itself manifest in this plane through their particular vehicle and form, through their art. And opening your hips could, for instance, be part of you personally allowing your vehicle to express it in your particular way.
Seems like the current point in time we're at now is that, as you say, for the yuppies, it's so attractive of people that have been working on themselves, doing their therapy and trying to change things to make themselves comfortable and to stop hurting by adjusting their environment. It's such a relief to hear and see a teaching like Ramana Maharshi's, which to the mind looks so absolutely relaxing. And it certainly seems a very fine line between relaxing as already isness and being lazy and just settling for your normal closures, kinks, and not bothering to do it. And what I see the paradox is that it's so difficult for people to see both sides of this coin, that there is absolutely nothing to do, and at the same time being true to this evolutionary impulse to evolve, for to allow love to manifest more fully through human form. And it's that paradox of doing nothing and allowing everything to happen fully is so difficult to understand.
Well, it's really only difficult to somebody who's beginning to relax in that way. It's effortless. It's the way it is. So it's really not difficult. The paradox of everything being perfect as it is, or God as it is, consciousness as it is, and simultaneously feeling the evolutionary impulse or love's impulse to manifest more deeply, or consciousness's impulse to recognize itself more inclusively. When you relax sufficiently, or just give in or surrender to be lived by that which is already living you, there is no paradox in action at all. You are surrendered in the moment, and you are being lived by a large, incomprehensible to the mind, unfathomable force of being or love that does move you in an evolutionary way. It does move you as part of love's greater and greater embrace. There's no paradox at all. Everything is as it is already love, and love is including more and more in its recognition through various ways. There's only a paradox in the mind of people, and if that mind is an active distraction to your relaxation, then there's no answer to that paradox. And again, I would say if you can settle for simply being, then simply be, because that's all you could do anyways. But also, perhaps, so you're not self-deluded, it might be good to ask the people around you whether they felt that your simply being was being transmitted through your vehicle with, say, the force of Ramana Maharshi. That is, that everyone around you can feel the peace, the love, the humor of your simple being. Or if your what you called simple being was creating suffering in other people's lives, inadvertently perhaps, but still, that feedback creates an error check for beginners who will ignore that feedback at first, because most beginners feel that nobody could know what's true except themselves, and to listen to other people's feedback is a denial of their own heart's truth. But that's a very beginner's point of view, in the sense of feeling that there is a separate self, that no one could get inside me and know my feelings, where just a tiny bit of practice or relaxation beyond that, you feel every body arising simultaneously, and you trust the love that's coming through all of these bodies. And so when 20 bodies around you are telling you that they feel that what you call simple being is creating pain in people's lives, that they feel it is tension, that they don't trust you, then it's good to realize that what you're calling simple being is really simple being including a bunch of patterns of your body and mind, thought patterns, emotional patterns, behavioral patterns that are hurting other people. You could still just be with that if that's what you want, but love itself has an inherent motive not to create undue suffering. And so by hearing that feedback, love itself would respond with its own native intelligence, do whatever was necessary to relax open the knots or kinks or patterns of the body-mind that were creating damage to others, even just emotional suffering to others. So, yeah, there's a lot of people out there who are relieved by, oh, finally I can just relax and not have to do anything. And that's a good first step, a good foundation, because you don't have to do anything, but that's just the foundation of practice. After that comes a lifetime, or however you want to talk about time, of practicing, of allowing that relaxation to saturate every nook and cranny of every vehicle that you identify as you and you identify as not you. And so all of this is arising as love, which it is already. And yet it's becoming more inclusive, more saturated into every nook and cranny over time. And we are part of that saturation. We're part of that dance. If people want to deny that temporarily in their own spiritual growth, if they get a hit of realization and they see that it's true, it's the case already, they don't need to do anything, that's a good stage. I mean, that's a natural stage of spiritual practice, but it only takes a few seconds of feedback, as you've seen many times, for people who are supposedly very realized to get a little feedback and find out that they're creating quite a bit of suffering, and they're not as realized as they thought, that in their head they think their consciousness or their love, but their body and emotion and mind are patterning and affecting the environment in ways that are really hurting people. Love has an inherent desire, one might say, to not hurt others unnecessarily. And so if one has the capacity to feel how one's affecting others, especially through their feedback, I think that it wouldn't take too many years for somebody who is just saying, hey, I'm just being, to realize the way they were just being, the pattern that they were being, could be adjusted a tiny bit here and there, and greater art would manifest, greater beauty, greater truth would manifest through their life.
I think that's a unique gift that I've seen through your teaching, is really using the feedback from other people to really judge where you're at, because it becomes so clear in attending your workshops how deluded we are about our own evolution, where we're actually at. And it's amazing how accurate other people's feedback is, and it becomes clear that you really can't trust your own internal calibration mechanism, especially at the start, because we just can't see our own stuff through our stuff. It's like we're kind of lost inside our own patterns, and we're so used to them that we're not even aware of them. So it's an amazing tool that you sort of worked out to use to incorporate that into a spiritual practice. The challenge is that at this moment, it seems like a lot of people are in this new spiritual wave that's coming through the West as a way to feel good, as a way to, you know, not feel lonely, or to feel, you know, part of God, and to become, you know, more full with life. And what I see with a lot of your teaching is that a lot of people experience pain when they're in your workshops to quite a large degree. So it seems a paradox that people come to be more open and experience themselves as love, but in the process they're feeling, you know, utterly distraught and terrible.
Well, they're feeling what they've always been feeling, but haven't been letting in. And so perhaps a more accurate way of saying that is they're feeling what they've been doing all along. They're feeling the patterns, the relationships, the activities that they've been doing all along, but they haven't been letting the consequences into their heart. They haven't been allowing themselves to feel in their heart the consequences or the effects of their activities, or even of their emotional being, how it ripples out into so-called space and affects others. And so the pain that they feel, as you're describing it, is really just becoming more sensitive and more open to what they have already been causing in the world and in other people's lives and in their own bodies, but have become immune to. It's kind of like when you put a watch on in the morning and wear it all day. A few hours into the day, you forget you've worn the watch. And most people don't feel the watch they're still wearing. They don't feel the patterns that they've evolved since childhood, the patterns they've been wearing, so to speak, for 20, 30, 40, 50 years. They don't notice them anymore. But once their notice is brought to them, once their attention is directed, once some of their patterns are reflected to them and they feel it, it's intensely painful. And it could be emotionally painful, physically painful. It could also be very blissful and pleasurable as those patterns are released and greater energy flows through the body, or a deeper love can flow between your body and another body. So if people are just in it to feel good, then they should watch TV and eat cookies and make money and protect themselves from the intense suffering that's occurring all over the world, and the suffering that they're creating through their own chosen lifestyle, and the suffering they're doing by not breathing deeply right now, and the suffering that they're causing their lovers by not connecting with their heart moment by moment. They should ignore all of that. Otherwise, they would feel everyone's pain, not only their pain. So a little bit of willingness to allow the joy and the pain that is real in your and other people's bodies and minds and emotions to touch your heart, a willingness to allow your heart, your love, your depth, to receive that and let it in. And it may be excruciatingly painful, but that is what you're doing. That is what other people are doing. That is what is happening. And the first step of any true spiritual practice is to be able to be with what is without recoiling, without retracting, without separating yourself, to be willing to feel with no separation everything, every emotion of yours and others, every moment without boundaries, without divisions, and people have been living with divisions and keeping pain at bay by numbing themselves through all kinds of means, from television to falsely motivated meditation. So of course, if they come to one of these workshops and those patterns are intervened with, and suddenly their heart has a moment where they can feel what they've always been doing anew, they may be shocked, even horrified perhaps, by the pain they feel and that they're causing others. But they may also feel great bliss at the capacity to open others and the love that is alive as them. And so using your own subjective feelings, as you said, the pain or the bliss, using that as a kind of calibration is misleading for one's practice, which is why it's really important to have a group of other people who you trust, who can reflect to you, because what might feel very painful to you might in fact be your opening, and you're feeling more deeply, so you're feeling more pain, but other people are feeling you opening and receiving a deeper gift of yours. That sometimes happens.
Seems like when we practice love, it's brutally honest. And that's what I really like about the way you teach these workshops is, you know, I feel like you don't really pull any punches. You just give people a clear mirror of where they're at and let them feel exactly what they're doing to their environment, to the people around them. And in some way, it's like you're almost a surgeon, where you've got this knife that cuts quite deeply and cleanly to the heart of the matter. So whilst the incision may have a bit of pain, the long-term effect is that it cuts out a lot of bullshit and lost time, and, you know, this gentle ongoing suffering that's not even noticed to a large degree. So it really seems to be brought in your face pretty quickly.
Well, I don't feel it's so much the incision as it is people's finally allowing themselves to feel what they're doing. And it's not something new being brought in their face. It's what they're already doing. They're not having a boundary between their feeler, so to speak, their heart or their sense of being, and what they're doing. And without that boundary, they suddenly can look into their lover's eyes and feel on a microsecond feedback level, moment by moment, the wincing and the surrender that they are evoking in their lover's heart, or the wincing or surrender that they're evoking in the hearts of everyone around them. And again, those everyones are the same one they are. And by trusting that one, that's true surrender or true devotion, to trust the one that is living what seems like all of us, and yet it's just one. So it's nothing new being brought in their face, and it's not the incision that hurts, I don't think, so much as them allowing themselves to feel the denial of that one in themselves and everybody else, and the incredible emotional strategies they use to deny that one, to deny love relationally and as individuals. Physical strategies like your hips, which can be seen as a physical way of denying openness, of clamping down, of tension. So whether it's emotional, physical, mental, to suddenly feel what you've always been doing and have become unconscious of, for that to rise into consciousness or into the feeling domain can be painful. It's not always painful, but it is quite often. But if you allow yourself to relax with that and be with that fully and feel that and open through that, and with a little skill, little art, you can open and give love through that pain, and it's not an obstacle at all. It's a kind of bittersweet pain. It's just human. You're born, people die. This place, this human domain, is not always comfortable. It's not always heavenly. There are aspects of being human that are difficult and painful, and there are aspects of being human that are extraordinarily beautiful, and all of that is felt finally. And in that that could be overwhelming to some people. So this kind of work isn't for most people. It's not even for most spiritual practitioners or people who think they're spiritual practitioners. And again, I would suggest that anyone who's fine with being how they are and relaxing with that, and that's sufficient for them, I would recommend for them to just continue doing that. It's only when that's no longer sufficient for them, when they become aware of the nooks and crannies that remain unsaturated by love or knowledge or feeling. It's only when they can feel the intense pain that everyone around them, which again is their same being, but everyone around them, the pain in them becomes so moving that they are then spontaneously moved to deepen their practice, help relieve that suffering in others, even though they're only apparent others, even though it's only an apparent self, and even though that suffering is only apparent, there's still that motion, that movement that occurs naturally, that love wants all to unfold as love in its fullest, richest, deepest way. And sometimes pain is marbled in with that opening to a greater or lesser degree, depending on each person's place in the mandala or their karma or their predispositions.
And because of that, sometimes I wonder just how many people really are ready or really able to practice your teaching long term, because that when people see how much suffering they're creating in through their actions, through their closure and feeling that intense suffering, then comes the reaction to try and change ourselves again, and then to go into a closed sort of neurotic, I have to improve myself, to have to change myself, or my partner should be different, they should be treating me differently and acting differently. And as you say in your terminology of the three stages, where in first stage we just do stuff for ourselves, second stage we're trying to create a harmonious relationship, and third stage we do anything that opens us and our and people around us to God. The tools that are taught, when people feel how someone else should be, it becomes like a boxing rings of shoulds. You should be acting like this, or I should be acting more like that, and the scene becomes almost quite violent in a way.
Yeah, again, that's a gross misinterpretation of any kind of spiritual practice. People are the way they are, and the first step of any spiritual practice is to be with them exactly how they are, with no need or effort to change them whatsoever. People and everything, hurricanes, ants, they just are. And you are part of that, and to allow that blooming of everything, the blooming of earthquakes and fires, the blooming of ants, the blooming of divorces and marriages, the blooming of human lives and human deaths, to be able to be as all of that, one with or as all of that, is the foundation of spiritual practice. So as soon as you're in a place that you've described of feeling that I should be a certain way and you should be a certain way or somebody should be a certain way, you've already bypassed the very ground of spiritual practice, which is the relaxation with what is as it is. So if somebody has bypassed that step, then they'll just create suffering through their actions or their so-called practice. They'll be trying to, as you say, violently, even if it doesn't appear violently, it's still violence, to forcing people to be a certain way, rather than allowing love to simply saturate all beings fully and artfully. And that saturation is an art. It does require at times various skills. For instance, we're speaking in English. We had to learn English at some time. Maybe what we're saying is artful, maybe it isn't. But if it is artful, it's artful to the extent that includes the training we've both had in the art of speaking English. So there was no violence done in learning that art. It's provided us with a capacity to express love. Well, all practices are like that. You're just practicing an art. It's not like someone should speak English. Maybe they speak French. Maybe they don't speak anything at all. But certainly learning the art of English increases one's capacity to articulate love in English. Well, if you want to have sex, for instance, and you want to articulate love through sex, you can learn sex more or less skillfully. If you want to learn to talk with people, you could learn how to speak more or less skillfully. If you want to learn how to touch people or walk down the street, or just be in a way that doesn't create suffering but helps all open, that can require practice, just like we had to practice the English language to come to the point of articulating love through the words we're using now. So there was no should involved. It's just the manifest domain is this intermeshing pattern of waves of love, of patterns that are patterning and continue to pattern in their own way unless deeper love is allowed to saturate through them, which loosens the pattern to recognize its own divinity and the divinity of all patterns, which further loosens the pattern so that there isn't a sense of me and you as separate. So trust is immediate and complete. And in that, if one felt that another's actions were less than love, one would spontaneously and lovingly and artfully help the other express that love in a more fully loving way at the proper pace and the artful style, which wouldn't be a should. It wouldn't be violently forcing somebody to be a way you thought they should be. It would be allowing love to come through both of you in a more deep way. And again, we're speaking in English. That required practice. Well, perhaps somebody requires some hatha yoga practice, or perhaps somebody would require breathing practices, or perhaps somebody would require learning how to walk or stand a certain way so that others received their art more fully. That's sometimes a beautiful way to cultivate the art of love. It's, again, it's unnecessary if one doesn't want to give love through sex, if one doesn't want to offer the art of love through walking, through breathing. One doesn't have to cultivate those skills, those artful patterns, but that's up to each person to feel how love moves them when they surrender to be lived by love fully. It's not a matter of shoulds, how different people should be. It's a matter of discovering how love lives us.
So some of those shoulds run very subtly, and sometimes you find yourself motivated to do something and it's not just being open to be moved by love. It's sometimes very hard to distinguish the pure movement of love and at some level a egoic, I should be something, or trying to get something from this realm rather than recognizing the futility of trying to get anything from here.
Well, it's actually not that difficult to feel the difference. First of all of it is love. Even the egoic grasping is love in egoic form. So again, the root of practice emerges from a relaxation of being that's established in the oneness of love. If you are already thinking in terms of what are egoic actions and what are not egoic actions, there's already the violence that you're talking about. But many people do that. And so one of the best ways, as we talked about a little earlier, of helping people realize when they're doing it, because they become immune to their own doing of it, like wearing the watch all day, is to have reflection from other people, feedback from other people that they trust. Then they can calibrate through other people's feedback, which is really the same one being, but through other bodies without the same patterns. They could calibrate what is more artful and less artful without wondering, am I coming from, as you're talking about, an egoic grasping, or am I coming from a natural relaxation of love? Even thinking in those terms is already violent. It's already ignorance. It's all just coming up with feeling that certain actions are love and certain actions are not love is kind of spiritual ignorance. Everything as it is right now is love. But to varying degrees, those actions allow the transmission of love, the expression of love. Some are more constricted expressions. Some are downright contracted to the point of being violent and harmful. Some are less restricted and more full and more profound. And that is a matter of art or a matter of cultivation of skill. But there's, it's a very, very, again, beginner's or mental appreciation of the spirit that is alive as all of us, that is coming from a place of wondering, am I coming from an egoic place? Am I coming from a love place? As soon as you're asking that, it's clear you're already living in the realm of divisions. You're already trying to achieve something. You're already for striving for something that is not. You're already not feeling what is, which is boundless, is divisionless, simply is love. But people do that a lot. And so people need training. People need reflection. People need practices to help reflect that to them over and over and over. And it may take people seconds to feel that. It may take people years and years and years or decades of reflection before they really come to relax enough and trust the reflection they're getting so that their art magnifies.
So is there a final goal to your teaching?
I don't think so. I actually don't feel like I have a teaching. There are many great beings who have come before us and have established teachings, and I think they've done incredible jobs of doing that. So there are plenty of teachings that are out there, you know, the major religious teachings, Buddhism, Hinduism, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, whatever you want to define the major teachings as. And then there's many other spiritual practices, subdivisions of teachings. There's so many teachings, all of which are aspects of the truth. I'm more of a plumber, basically, that comes around and helps people who are already involved in a teaching, for the most part, because only such people are usually open to this kind of work, find out where their pipes are clogged, where what they've become numb to, the patterns they've become habituated to, and I just help them open to be the love that they are more fully. But I don't have a specific teaching, nor do I represent a specific teaching, nor do I want followers who think they're following my teaching. As I said, there are other people alive now and people who have come before and are dead that have established very comprehensive and beautiful teachings. It's just that there are very few strong practitioners, and so people think they're practicing these teachings that are given by others, but they're not. And so perhaps I could help them realize how they could practice the teaching that they're already practicing more deeply, more truly, more profoundly, and with more beauty. But I don't really have a teaching, and so I guess my goal is just to allow people to recognize who they are more deeply, but within the context of their own practice. Whether they're Buddhists, they would continue being Buddhists, or Christians, they might continue being Christians, or whatever they are. What I do isn't an alternative to that. It takes place in the context of the practices that they've already chosen to do, or the teacher they've already chosen to follow. I don't provide an alternative to that or an alternative goal to that. I'm more like a plumber, as I said, that just helps open the tubes so they could flow more fully and be the love that they are and practice with whatever teacher or teaching they've already chosen.
So living as art rather than closing down, living as art.
Yeah, it's just unnecessary to create as much pain as we do. And I feel moved to help people live the love that they're ready to live, because they are that love already. Although many people, as you know, including ourselves, to some degree hold back living that love and want to hold back. They're not ready to surrender that deeply. They're not ready to allow their life to be ruined by love. They need a degree of comfort and finality and thinking they know where they're going, or thinking there even is someone who's going somewhere. To those people, I wish them luck and hope that they enjoy their trips.